Colonel Hutchison, Real 11. Well, we're talking about Lance Corporal Gourlay and his loss of nerve after a period of service, not immediately. And you were saying about how you treated him after he came to you. What exactly did he say?
Look, I can't go on, but I mean, that's in effect what he said. I just can't go on.
Did you try and persuade him, jolly him along, or was it obviously hopeless?
I think I really denied. I wasn't, and when he came after protocol, I wasn't aware that it was in a really bad way at all. But no, I don't think I did. I think I just accepted the situation. But said, well, then we'll just have to report to whoever it was running ASR. And
did you think worse of him?
Mm-hmm.
Did you think worse of him?
Yeah, that's what I did. It's disappointing because I like the man, and he wouldn't have been my driver otherwise. On training before we got overseas, you know, he was usually the number of the crew and a good driver. But I took on a chap called Aitken, who was one of the headquarter tanks drivers, and he drove me until the end of the war.
Do you know his first name?
Hmm?
Do you know Aitken's first name?
Aitken, yes. And he was a good driver. And he was a fighter to Kenton. He was a Kenton fighter. Yeah, there was a post office shop that he returned to. Saw him after the war. I don't think he's alive now. I haven't seen him for some time.
And that was your crew settled down again.
Yeah,
with that.
Yeah.
So you were in this orchard at Le Quelle, sort of basically again healing, settling down again with the new recruits, new transfers in. Anything? The next. What was the next thing that you recall?
I wanted all to move, I suppose. And then off we went again, in a slightly different tack, going more in a south, instead of a southerly direction, past Vier, going more in a southeasterly direction, but through the same sort of type of country, hill country, intersected with these small streams, and the Germans. Exercising a sort of delaying action over there, blowing bridges.
Were they actually in retreat now?
Mm. We were getting quite. The Germans, you see, the Americans by then had broken out on the west. The Patton's Third Army had been loosed into the breach, you know. And I suppose the Germans must be then becoming aware that they must withdraw from what became this sort of valet's pocket, which they did, although they suffered all the casualties there. But they got a lot of stuff out. And I suppose they were reaching that stage where they were, you know, trying to stop us and blow up tanks and so on. Delay us and then withdraw again, and that went on for several days, I suppose.
Now, one thing that happened was on the 14th of August, I think your first day of advance in the La Roque area, Sergeant Gale, your three troop commander, was killed. And
that's right.
Do you recall the incident? He was just ambushed, I think.
The leading squadron, they got held up, and so we were sent round with the infantry, who were pretty slow, I must say. I remember they were beginning to get a little nervous, I think, to around the sort of left flank at sweep to relieve the position. And we did that. But before we got this sort of crossroads, Sergeant Gale's tank had been knocked out by either an SP or a single tank, you know, which then withdrew. And we recovered his tank. And I was upset about Gale because he was such a fairly effective and quiet, unobtrusive fellow and fairly effective. I remember having to take his charred remains out of the solid building.
Would that wouldn't normally be your job, would it?
No. But was nobody else there. Well, I mean, we recovered the tank and towed it in to the leader where we were. It was burned out, the tide was. And I think that all the crew in the tide had been killed. But I think the driver and the co-driver not.
Says himself and the gunner were killed. It doesn't mention the wireless operator.
Yeah.
Why would you? I mean, if the tank was burnt out, was it not useless, or was the main body of the tank all right?
No, I should. I don't know. No, it would be pretty well done. I think it would be whether it be repair wireless or not. That one, because I wasn't in too many burnt out tanks. Because when I have other things to do with it, I just do remember this incident.
Was it not a terrible job to have to recover the corpse from?
Yes. Particularly with somebody who knew and liked and respected. But, mind you, by this sort of stage, one was becoming accustomed to that sort of thing. I don't know, accustomed to it. And it seems more difficult to understand or reconcile now. But at that time, I don't know. I wouldn't say one became coarser, but definitely good fellow.
Did you find your own, your personal morale? I mean, did you find you were starting to find going into action harder? Some people find it fairly easy at first, but then find it more and more difficult to go into action. Were you finding nerves more of a problem, or any of a problem at this stage? Or?
I think with experience, one became a bit more cautious. One became more skillful too, I think, in not looking for trouble unnecessarily. I mean, if you're going up to a place where you didn't know, weren't going to be able to see beyond, and you could make use of a building or bushes or trees and that sort of thing, you would sidle up alongside there so that you were less obvious target to anybody who was going to shoot at you, that sort of thing.
Now,
I think that the more experienced tank commanders by this stage were the ones that perhaps survived longest. I mean, I think of Steve Brownlee and his troop attacks, which that may be luck. But on the other hand, they worked probably harder than any other troop, and yet they survived. And I think the possibly became more skillful with battle experience.
Now, on going into Lager that night, you ran over a mine from the sound of things.
Yeah.
What do you remember of that?
That was a bang. I had my head out of the turret. Was on a sort of country road. And I'd blown down into the turret. I was hurt anyway. but then the blast had the effect of blowing me down into it. I found out that we drove the top. We didn't have to go very far from where we were leaving, and we got the tank. I made it quite quick to the track, and then.
That was the only damage, was it?
No, but other than the fact that it broke at the track and had to be mended, no other damage, no.
Now, what's the next? Again, you were moving forward, I think.
Yes. I can have pictures of places. One place went through a village and paused slightly, and there were people about by that stage. First times, you know, we see foreigners or French country people. I remember being given a glass or two of wine while I was in this particular village. And then we got across a little bridge. We were half blown. We got across all right, haven't we, officially blown. And so I said, I'm going down to have a look. And I did not want to take the tank down there, so I jumped into my Skype car and drove down to the bridge to find out what was getting on to myself. And in a sort of atmosphere of gay abandon, as a result of having some coarse red wine.
They were pretty. The civilians were pretty pleased to see you. They were pleased to see you then.
Oh yes. Oh, my goodness, one wonders. Having done so much damage to their countryside as a result of our coming through and fighting our way through, we thought they might have been more reserved, but. And then further on, when things broke out, I don't know, you got tremendous reception from local people, if you were the first British soldiers through.
What next? You were breaking, this was the breakout, and the pace was increasing, wasn't it?
Yes, it was all the time. And as I was moving, all the time, one's memories of individual places are hazy, you know, it's all going too fast.
Was there much sign of the speed of the German retreat? Because it was a bit of a disaster for the German army, the Falaise gap, general thing. Was there much equipment and horses and the rest of it lying about?
Not there, no. Not much. It wasn't until we got across the Orme. One began to see more of that. We crossed it into a place called Coutanche, near Argentan.
And what next?
Well, I suppose it would be the second day after we crossed the Orme. We were going east. B squadron, I think, were leading, and they got stuck. On account of a bridge being blown in front of them. And so I was sent with my squadron round to the right to see if we could find an alternative place across a small stream, further up or downstream. And we found such a place, a little minor bridge. But anyway, I took the tanks, and there was a little bit of a lane on the bridge, and then this main road, and the leading tank, which was one of Peter Norland's tanks was hit by an anti-tank gun firing down the road. And so he dismounted and went forward to see what was anything could do. The exit onto the road was blocked by this tank, and the gun fired again, and he was wounded in the hand, and that was the last we saw of him. So, although other members of his troop maybe survived until the end of the war, he wasn't with us for very long, Peter Norland. However, Colonel Scott was beginning to get a bit impatient about getting on this road. And as I said, we couldn't get out immediately then. And so I dismounted and managed to get a tank into a field where it could fire up the road. But it couldn't see properly. I was in front of it and got into the ditch where I could see the gun up the road. And I said, tell him where to put a shot down, HE, which he did, and it burst in the middle of the road opposite the gun. And so I used German binoculars all the time during the war. They were very good on Zeiss. With reticules on them. They're metal wires, so that's why I use them. So I said, put my hand up and I said, right to whatever it was that you see. So, and this was Boller. It was his tank. And so he had right to. And the next shot exploded above my head because it hit a cast iron. A signpost saying 2 kilometres to Gasse and whatever it was. I thought, oh Christ, this is it. But of course, the velocity of the shell took all the blast went forward. Well, I thought that he'd kill me. He jumped down the tank and he's awkward. And he's, so I was all right. He said, are you all right? I said, yes, I think so. But I think you may have hit me in the bottom. He said, take down your trousers and let's have a look. Well, it's just a fragment of shell. But I've still got the overalls. So I went downstairs with a sort of jagged cut from a fragment of a splinter of a shell that had, ripped the boss these overalls and it just broke my skin. I think shortly after that we managed to do something about the gun and open up the road. But we didn't get much further that evening. I remember we leaguered in a field near a farm, and we were going to start the 4th Light to go on our way, and the farmer said, come into the kitchen and have breakfast with us. So I went in, and breakfast there consisted of a mug of ersatz coffee made out of acorns, I suppose, and a pretty great slug of Calvados and nothing else. So I got into my tank on an empty stomach with the tank. Calvados is quite a powerful liquor, particularly if it's a home distilled one. And the other thing that I remember particularly that it's not important to this is that I went back to have a look at this site again when I was on holiday in France and found it And furthermore, I found a broken piece of this signpost lying at the bottom of the signpost, just propped up against it. It had been maybe some years after the war. I had a car, and I regret it very much afterwards that I didn't just pop it in the boot and take it home.
Now, that was on the 21st of August, those events. Well, that's when Northern was wounded,
yeah.
And then it does fit the theme. What's the next period? Again,
we did some of the end, we motored on, and I don't think we had any further action before we came to very near a nice town called Leg, where we paused before crossing the Seine, and until the infantry had got a bridgehead across the other side. And so we must have spent nearly a week whilst we were just resting and waiting to get across.
You've got Lieutenant Hales there. Do you remember him?
Yes, I do. Yes.
What was he like?
He's all right. I thought I wasn't awfully impressed with him to begin with. I thought he was too fat.
Too fat?
Fat. But in fact, he's all right. I think he was with us up till the end of the war, I think.
Now, on the 28th of August, you started to move up for the crossing of the Seine.
Yes.
What do you remember of that? I think it was at Vernon.
We had quite a drive from Leg to Dunnell, where we crossed the Seine. And there was a certain, an element of uncertainty as to whether we were to cross that day. We arrived at Dunnell in the evening, I suppose. And then, I think in the event, we did cross. But after dark, and we leaguered, there was a road going up through a wooded hill and out into more open country. And we leaguered at the side of the road, I think, as a regiment, but not very far over the bridge. And only went out into open country the following morning when I was in reserve, I think.
Yes, that would be right, on the 29th of August. This is the beginning of the advance to Amiens, which is quite a remarkable advance.
Yes.
What do you recall of that?
I wasn't much involved that first day. I think we may have had some minor job to do. I don't remember anything about it. But the second day, I was the leading squadron, and we had some terrific days. It really had broken out then, and we were going across nice, rolling, very open country, with nice little roads and fields, and it was fairly open, so you could see what you were doing. We just kept going. And occasionally, when we get to crossroads, we might bump into a German column, give them a bit of a shoot up, and then afterwards we didn't bother to take prisoners or anything like that, we just went on. Towards the end of the day, some of our tanks were beginning to run out of petrol. And Colonel Scott, he said, it doesn't matter, just leave them behind. Well, they get filled up when the lorries come on. You keep going. And so he kept going.
You changed tanks at one stage, didn't you? You had to change tanks yourself.
Did I?
according to...
Yes, I think I ran out, yes, that's right, but got into another one, yeah. And we got to our eventual destination with a fuel tank, which was quite enough. And it was a most exhilarating day. You've never done anything like this before.
You shot up some German convoys. Do you remember that in any detail, or what would happen?
No, not really. I remember it was going up a slight hill and into a sort of wide junction, and they came across it. And shot up.
You shot them up, or you?
No, I didn't. The leading troop did.
They didn't get. They shot up the Germans, though.
Yes. The Germans were just transport. And then, eventually, we got to our ultimate objective, and I think that's where we paused. And it took some time to collect everyone up.
So you were leading during the day of the 30th, this would be, and then other squadrons took over for their night, because there was a night advance into Amiens.
Yes, right. We stopped at this near a small village which was our objective, and collected the rest of the squadron together and got sort of filled up with petrol.
That would be Heptamesnil. Heptamesnil.
That's right. I remember. And it was well after dark by the time we got going, and so we motored on with the A echelon, I think, with us. We were quite a column of vehicles. I was damn tired, and so I got out of my tank and got into the scout car, a little scout car, a little armoured thing, lightly armoured thing, and I said, look, I'm going to have see if I can have some sleep. For God's sake, I said, don't lose the tank in front, and if anything goes wrong, wake me up. And so I sort of collapsed in a heap at the bottom of this thing. And we went on. And we went through a town, quite a large town.
Tresnel? Tresnel? It doesn't seem clear in here.
Looks like C-O-N-T-I.
Right. Right.
What it involved was that we had to turn the column around and go back through this small town and take the right road out of it.
You got lost, in other words.
Yes, whoever was leading the column had got lost.
Now, one thing in that...
The odd thing was... The thing was still occupied by the Germans, who the next day reacted, and there had to be quite a considerable attack put in before they get out, but they kept their heads down whilst we were messing around, driving backwards and forwards through the place.
Now, it mentions that Lieutenant Sampson's tank caught fire. Now, this seems to be a recurring feature.
I was furious with it.
What happened?
I don't know. They were filling up with petrol. Well, no, I don't know how it happened. Anyway,
you blamed him anyway.
Hmm?
You blamed Samson for it.
He was the tank commander after all.
Now, what happened when you actually got near Amiens? Because you seem to have left your squadron and gone off to RHQ, west of Tresnel.
I went to get orders, you see, and it was a fantastic. See, very open country around Amiens on the Somme River, running fast, and lots of roads, main roads, converging, and there were German columns on neighbouring roads. You could see them, And so everyone was having a spending time firing away at these enemy columns, all converging on the city.
That's that.